This is the Mobile Tech Podcast, brought to you by worldpodcasts.com. Now here's your host, Tech Girl Miriam Joie.
Brought to you by Audible. Stay tuned for a special offer at the end of the show. Hi, and welcome to the Mobile Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Miriam Joie, and today is Friday, September 30th, 2022, and I have the excellent Matt Miller of ZDNet. How are you?
I'm great. Good to talk to you again. It's been a while. Sorry, my schedule's been so crazy, I haven't been able to connect with you for a while.
Dude, I'm so happy you made it finally. And you know what? It doesn't matter. Like, if you're busy, you're busy. It's cool. I will always get you on eventually. And every time I have you on, it's a great show because we go out in the weeds and talk about some cool stuff together. So I say, let's talk more about wearables this week, because I know that you've been focusing on this more on your coverage at ZDNet. And I'm really curious. You have some really interesting insights on some of the things we might be seeing on the Pixel Watch because of your Fitbit review. And you are the most insane in terms of the coverage you've given the Watch Ultra from Apple. Like, your review is magnificent. So I'd love to hear your thoughts starting on the Fitbit, especially in the context of the Pixel Watch.
Yeah, so the Fitbit is interesting, right? This is the Sense 2 that I took a look at, and I figured the Sense last time was the best Fitbit that they launched with. And this one is very interesting because more than what we see is new, is we see things missing, which is very interesting because now I'm wondering what the Pixel Watch is going to have. So missing items in this Sense 2 from the Sense is there's no third-party apps. That was a bit of a shocker to me. And maybe some people that use a Fitbit don't think about these apps. I asked my daughter, who uses a Fitbit every day, but with no third-party apps, you no longer have the Starbucks app, you no longer have the Strava, there's no longer Spotify, there's no music control at all, actually, in there. So
wow,
it's
so this is like a, it's kind of like the reverse of Pebble, which had just apps, basically. Remember?
Yeah. I still have some of those original Pebbles. Yeah.
So where do you think they're going with that? Because wouldn't you think people want these features?
So I'm wondering if, and it's very clear in all the materials and things, they did add constant EDA. So the EDA scanning before was a conscious thing that you had to do and you take a measurement. Now you can turn on a mode that's constantly checking your stress levels. So that's a new health and fitness feature. But it seems to me that this Fitbit nowadays is very, very, very focused on the health and wellness. And I think what we're going to see is they're focused on the health and wellness, and then they'll leave all of the really smart stuff to the Pixel Watch. That's why I think they're making this transition. And we knew there was going to have to be some changes when Google bought Fitbit, right?
Right.
I'm a little surprised, though, that they're kind of slapping developers in the face a little bit that were developing for a Fitbit OS. Because of no third-party apps in the current watches, you got to buy an old one to get those apps, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're a customer and you're like, oh, I need a new Fitbit because mine broke, and then you go to the online store or Amazon or whatever, and you're like, oh, this looks like the new one, I'm just going to buy it. Like, that's a big caveat, right? Because you're expecting some features and you're not getting them. You know, this kind of reminds me again of Pebble in a way because, you know, Fitbit did acquire the Pebble software team.
Right.
And it seems to me that this very lightweight OS that they're running on Fitbit is really best suited for, you know, kind of very specialized purpose watch, right? Like, health and fitness focus makes sense. Dropping the app makes sense in some way because it's such a nightmare to maintain an ecosystem of apps. And if your parent company, Google, is coming along and saying, you know, we're going to make I kind of like to think there's a distinction between a fitness band on steroid watch, you know, versus a smartwatch.
Right.
And the difference is that, you know, Apple Watch is a smartwatch. Like, everything can run on it. It has cellular connectivity optionally, and it has apps, and the apps kind of like are pretty fully featured. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Android Wear has kind of tried to do that and not quite succeeded, but that's kind of where they're headed. And maybe the Pixel Watch will bring that back. And Samsung is doing that too with the Galaxy Watch series.
Right.
But I think then you have an entire ecosystem, and I've always kind of put Fitbit into that ecosystem of even, and even Pebble in that ecosystem, because they're that lightweight OS that gives you great battery life,
yep.
You know, has more of a specialty focus and is, you know, basically not necessarily geared to apps, even though Pebble was and Fitbit used to be, at least on or is on previous products. You know, Huawei watches like the GT line, or, you know, this Honor watch I'm wearing, or the OnePlus watch, which a lot of people were disappointed with because they had the wrong expectations. Those are what I kind of call the Fitbit Band on steroids. And I think they're perfectly valid. In that sense, I am sure that the Fitbit Sense 2 that you reviewed does fulfill its goal, even though it's not for the right people, right?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it also, they say that Google Maps and Google Wallet is coming to that Fitbit Sense 2, but Google Assistant is not on board and is likely not to come. So there's a little bit of weirdness going on there. I do think, like what you just mentioned with all those other brands, there's also all of the Amazfit watches. Those are very close competitors to those Fitbit now as the health and wellness focused watches, right? With very little third-party apps or no third-party apps. And that's kind of what we're seeing with the Fitbits. I just want people that are looking at, that have the Fitbits, to be aware of the limitations on the new Fitbit. And we'll have to stay tuned next week to find out more about Pixel Watch and how that fits in. And I'm really curious to see, okay, so Fitbit is the health and wellness. What's the Pixel Watch going to contain? You know, we have a lot of rumors about parts of Fitbit, but what does that mean? And I'm really curious to see where Fitbit fits in on that Pixel Watch.
So what's the battery life on the Fitbit Sense 2?
It's still about a week.
That's pretty good.
Better than a smartwatch.
What I get on with always on display on this Honor watch, and it has a pretty small battery. The Huawei Watch GTs have been getting 2 weeks battery life from me because they have a slightly bigger battery. But again, these are essentially, you know, dumb watches because they have great fitness features like continuous heart rate sensing, blood oxygen monitoring, EKG functionality. They have continuous sleep sensing, so you don't even have to set it to sleep. You just have a nap, it counts it, and it gives you metrics on everything. I kind of love these watches.
Yeah.
Does the Fitbit do notifications in a way that is usable and useful?
No. They're very, 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 very basic. And if you have an Android watch, you can do some of the quick replies and things, but it's a very basic experience for that.
Yeah. So it really is just a fitness band on steroids. That
exactly.
Watch.
It's a fitness tracker and a watch form factor.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, that's interesting because in the past, I think they were gearing to be more well-rounded, more universal.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the next product, this is just an experiment and the next product is going to continue along the lines of things they were doing, or if this is it, the end of the line, we're going to keep seeing health and fitness focused bands from them. And as you said, Pixel taking over the kind of the heavy lifting, right?
That's what I really am wondering is if in the future, next year we see, you know, the next, the next tracker type of watch. Because there's still people that like the smaller trackers. So we just see Fitbit as the tracker and then everything else is in the Pixel Watch versions. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see next year. So
my big question is, can the Pixel Watch, I mean, let's hypothesize here. For me, the big thing about the Pixel Watch is I'm on board with a smarter smartwatch as long as battery life is good. And this is a challenge, you know. Apple, obviously, is a day battery life. The Ultra is different. We're talking about that in a minute. But, you know, we're talking a week on this one, a week on the Fitbit, a week or two on Huawei watches.
I get 3 days on the Galaxy Watch 5 Pro. You know, that's about max on a smartwatch.
See. Right. And Garmin has what? 3 months on some of them? Withings has like 3 months on some of
them? Some almost seem unlimited with the solar. Yeah.
Yeah. So my point is there's a different universe out there from 1 day to 3 months and with typically a week or two in the middle. I'm hoping that we start seeing what we saw with, you know, Pixel delivering 2 days, maybe like what we saw on Samsung, on some of the Samsung watches in the past with Tizen. I like 2 days. 2 days was a sweet spot for me because I could sleep at least with the watch and I could charge it very quickly by just putting on the charger for like 30 minutes while I showered or something in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think we're going to see that from Pixel or do you think we're going to be disappointed? It's going to be 1 day. They're just going to try to meet Apple standards, as it were.
Yeah, that's going to be the challenge, especially now with Samsung and Apple coming out with multi-day watches. But I think for people that use smartwatches, like you just mentioned, you're not, you know, you're going to take it off when you're, say, you're
showering in the morning.
Or if you're working at your desk for 3 hours in a row, that's a perfect time to go charge up your watch, right?
Yeah.
So I've come to expect a smartwatch battery life is just a day, right? And no more. And if it gets more, that's
do you sleep with your watches or do you wear a sleep tracker or have a mattress for sleeping? Oh, you have an Aura. Okay.
Yeah. I use the Aura. That is so. You know, the watches tend to hit my wife in the face and things like that.
I was going to say. So,
she doesn't appreciate. I do use them for testing every once in a while, but long term, I try something like the Aura.
Yeah, I've never tried the Ring. I kind of want to, but I don't have a connection there. The thing for me is that I've been using Huawei or I can't remember. I think a Xiaomi or a Huawei tracker, just like, you know, the band to sleep with. And it's been great because I get the data. It syncs with Google Fit and I see my sleep tracking, which is all I use it for. And I take it off during the day, you know, and the battery life when you don't wear it is like insane. You get like, you know, 2-3 weeks sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely.
So that's what working for me, because the watches are just a little too heavy and big to sleep with, in my opinion.
Yeah, and especially the bigger ones that I do love the big Garmins, but they get stuck underneath me when I roll over and things. And it's just, I mean, it probably causes worse sleep patterns by wearing it most of the time, actually. So.
Yeah, yeah. But you're a big Garmin user, right, in the
I
past?
Am.
Because you're pretty outdoorsy. So have you kind of written off Garmin yet with the Apple Watch Ultra? I didn't think you
would. It's a great challenge, and it is kind of flattering to Garmin, I would think, that Apple is trying to make that inroads. There's a long ways to go. I mean, I don't know if you saw Garmin says, we measure battery life in weeks or days or something.
Software is really leaves a lot to be desired, right?
Yeah.
And I think that in the same way as Nokia and Palm and BlackBerry, we were making fun of the iPhone. I think this should not be a time where they should be smart like that. This should be a time where they should go back to the drawing board and go like, what can we do to do both, to give us like that 3 weeks of battery life with a much better software experience on our future products, right?
But their focus on the athlete, they have gotten really good. And if you're looking for, you know, all kinds of advanced metrics, a bunch of different displays and things like that, I still think that they have a place. But I do think Apple's Watch Ultra is a pretty strong shot across the bow. And it makes me think, you know, it can really do a lot and serve as a smartwatch. So we'll see how it goes. But Garmin should be a bit worried.
So, yeah, do you think that, you know, there are some use cases that the Apple Watch Ultra makes Garmin obsolete on already with what the Ultra brings to the table today?
I do think, actually, you know, with the Watch OS 9, we've seen a lot of metrics come to the Apple Watch Ultra, especially for runners, right? And with the Apple Watch Ultra and that long battery life, I mean, you could easily go a couple marathons with the watch. It now has running power from the wrist, which Garmin does not have unless you wear a chest strap. I mean, there's actually features on the Apple Watch Ultra for runners that are better than what Garmin currently can provide. So I definitely think for runners, you know, it remains to be seen for those ultra marathoners that are running 100 miles and things like that. There has been some testing on that regard, but I still think there's some gaps. And I kind of mentioned it when I talked about it with things like golfing and fishing and stuff. But then again, you just need to explore the App Store, because there are a lot of third parties that will fill the gaps that are native to the Garmins. And that is really where Apple can step up, is, you know, having some of those third parties maybe in their advertisements, the ones that fill those gaps. And then there is parity,
right?
You know.
Do you think that the diving features are standout? Because, I mean, I've used to dive. It's been a long time since I've scuba dived. And so back then it was all very clunky, right?
Yeah,
this is like the 90s. Do you think that they're delivering something that's serious there? Or is this just, you know, kind of Apple marketing?
So that's an interesting question, because I'm the same as you. I'm scuba certified, but that was back in the 90s. Been a long time since I've done it. And I saw all this advertising. I'm like, okay, why did they pick diving as the sport to focus so much on I mean, how many people really are diving? And then when they're talking, what is it, 40 meters, 50? I mean, those are deep dive levels. Most people recreationally will go down 25, 30 feet, right? They're not diving at these deep levels. And I got to thinking about it. I'm wondering if it was a sport that they could pick where they could do a bunch of advanced things and battery life never even came into the formula or the equation, right? Because you're not ever going to dive long enough where you're going to burn out the battery in the Apple Watch Ultra.
Maybe that was actually a smart move for them, is that let's bring on some features that are not battery life dependent, but we can really leverage the product with, right?
Yeah. Because I do think, I mean, I almost wanted to go out and do some test diving because the functionality looks so awesome and very user-friendly, you know, very intuitive, all that kind of stuff. But I'm just curious what that market size for the divers that are really going to go and give up their dive computers for an Apple Watch Ultra. I don't know.
So tell us what you did to this poor Apple Watch Ultra in your review. I will put a link to both your Fitbit Sense 2 and Apple Watch Ultra review on the show notes of the podcast, but I want to hear from you. Like, what did you do? Tell us about, you know, your takeaway in the end, the goods and the bads.
So it was kind of crazy. I had signed up with my nephew for this Tough Mudder, which is a 15K. So that's 9+ miles, 30 obstacles. I've done a couple of them before. They're pretty challenging events. There's a few easy obstacles, but some are pretty challenging, and it is 9+ miles of running. My original intent was to run with the Galaxy Watch 5 Pro on one wrist and a Garmin on another, because I knew the Garmin Instinct could hold up to this kind of thing. The day before the event, my Apple Watch Ultra arrived, and I said, you know what? I'm going to risk $800 and see what this thing put its money where my mouth is, right? See how this thing can actually hold up. And I knew it was risky because I really expected the display to get scratched up. If you look at my video, I did take a GoPro along to try to capture some of the obstacles. I still have, you know, my legs are trashed because you spend a lot of time climbing over rocks and through pretty rough terrain, jumping walls, getting shocked with 10,000 volts of electricity, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Oh, jeez.
And I have to say, the Apple Watch, for a few reasons, it was awesome. I turned on the cellular service so my family could actually track me, because there's certain spots on the run where they can come and watch you do these obstacles. So they used the Find My on the watch to find me and actually send me encouraging messages of keep going, Dad, you can do it, things like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
It tracked perfectly. I've compared it to a Coros Vertex 2, which is a very rugged ultra watch. I use that as my standard just because I knew that could hold up to all kinds of damage and everything else. The track was almost exactly spot on. The heart rate was wonderful. I was amazed at the end, not a scratch on the screen. I mean, nothing. There is not any blemish on the display, the glass at all. And I did nothing to protect it. I just forgot it was on there and just went around.
Yeah, it just went nuts. Yeah.
The only flaw that I see is in the top left corner around the screen. There's a little teeny tiny scratches on the titanium bezel, but that's it. Everything else is perfect.
Okay.
You know, and the band, I was using the White Ocean band. It got a little, you know, a lot of mud and everything else. I just washed it up. It's perfect. Everything is perfect about the watch. Battery life, I think it went down just over 20% in the 2 hours and 40 minutes of the run. I was impressed. I was very, very happy at the end of it to see that it survived and it did well. And I even, at one point, I was scrolling through the different screens, seeing my running power, heart rate, all of that being tracked along. And it was impressive to be able to hold up to that kind of test, you know?
Well, it's good to hear that from firsthand from somebody who went crazy with it, because, you know, it's kind of one of the things that's hard to test unless you're, you know, pretty serious outdoorsy, you know, person like you are. But my point is, I feel like we haven't seen a lot of reviews like that. We've seen a lot of reviews that are like, oh yeah, you know, I did do extreme, like not extreme sports, but I do like, I'm an extreme runner or something, but not the kind of physical abuse that you'd normally expect. Plus I haven't seen a diving review yet. Then again, I haven't gone digging. And you know, a lot of it has been more like coming from an Apple Watch, people who are Apple Watch users trying it out more than people who are Garmin or specialty watch users trying it on.
Yeah, I have seen a couple that have gone on the real long runs and things like that. But I was rather than testing battery life on this particular one, I was really just trying to test the durability claims that they did.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And so that worked. That's a good thing. Do you like the fact that, you know, you and I both have pretty large wrists, so this is a watch that will look good on us. But I've actually seen it on smaller wrists, and it still looks good somehow. I don't know. It's pretty exciting. But I'm just feel like the screen real estate is a deal breaker, or I should say a positive, right? It's like, to me, it seems like you can almost replace an iPhone with this thing. Like, it's getting to the point where the real estate might just be enough with cellular connectivity where, you know, unless you're actively taking photos or something and posting them to social media, that you can probably do most of your day's stuff that's not on a work day, like on a you know, fun day with just a watch on your wrist.
Absolutely.
Do you feel that the slightly larger screen is like a game changer, makes a difference? Because that's what I've heard from a lot of people.
I do think it makes a difference. And I also think the fact that it's so flat, right? I have an Apple Watch 7 that definitely curves off at the edges and things like that, which makes it a little less protected in things. It is flat straight across. And like you said, you can use it as that. Plus with Siri and the voice dictation stuff, I mean, I usually use this most of the time for messaging because it's just more convenient. Somebody sends me a text to just turn it, tap, speak it and send it. I don't even pick up the phone and unlock the phone and all that kind of stuff, you know? So it is replacing a lot of the functions of my iPhone, you know, to be honest.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So thumbs up for you?
Thumbs up. Yeah.
You're still going to keep some specialty watches around like the Corox and some Garmin watches to do some other stuff, I presume. But can you see yourself wearing this again, or are you just going to return it or what?
Yeah, it's tough. I love the Garmin stuff, and I especially am a fan of the Enduro 2 with that integrated flashlight. I use that flashlight almost every night, you know, because you can turn on you can turn on white for brightness. I've used it to find things in the garage, or you can turn it on red.
So does the flashlight feature on the Apple Watch Ultra not work as well?
Nothing like that. No, okay. No. Yeah. I'll probably still wear both. You know, I for a long time I've been wearing a Garmin on one wrist and then some kind of a smartwatch on the other wrist, and I'll probably continue.
I remember that from you from a long time ago, actually. Even when you had the Pebble, you still had like another Garmin or something on your wrist. I remember that.
I can't give it up.
But this is so cool, guys. Just go check it out. The link is in the show notes. There's also a video there, a YouTube video that I'll link to. It's really awesome. I'm excited to see what Apple brings to the table, especially in terms of, you know, kind of like battery life and stamina going forward. I want to see them really work on that going forward. Yeah, I feel like, you know, as you said, one day is fine, but, you know, 3 or 4 days would be really great. Like, if they can get to that point, even on their regular watches in the future, I want to see that. I don't want them to see them going thinner and thinner and thinner like they did with the laptops and the phones. Now they're going back on the phones, right? They're going back to battery life on the phones. And I kind of feel that this is where I want the Apple Watch to go.
Yeah, in general. I just got back from a business trip and I went 3 full days with the Apple Watch Ultra. I wasn't running and things, but I was doing my normal things. On the fourth day, it still had 25%. So It is getting better on that Apple Watch Ultra. And some people are buying it just to get that extended battery life on there as well. The one kind of gap between something like a Garmin or a Coros and the Apple Watch that I think Apple is going to release and fix in an update, because they have the capability to do so, is the mapping, right? You talk about people taking this out for hikes and things. The track back feature is pretty cool, but all it is a little, you know, Graham or Cracker Trail, right, or whatever kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they have Apple Maps. So they have the ability to bring maps to it. I think it's just something they didn't get in time, but I think we're going to see an
update. I'm so surprised they didn't do that. That seems like a total no-brainer, right?
I feel it's coming. It's got to be coming.
Yeah. And this is the thing, right? This is where we also have to remember, you buy a Garmin, yes, you get software updates, you get support, you get new features, but I don't think that's their focus, you know, whereas I think Apple, that watch is going to be supported for 4 or 5 years, yeah, and it's going to get all kinds of goodies. Yep. And then there's third-party ecosystems. Who knows what brings what to the table on this hardware?
Yeah.
And to me, that's kind of where I would probably spend, if I had to spend $800 on a smartwatch, for my purposes, I think the Apple Watch Ultra might be, you know, the best. How does it compare, do you think, to the Samsung Watch Pro?
That's my next, the next thing I'm heading down.
Next adventure?
Yeah, because yeah. I did some testing with the Watch 5 Pro. I like it a lot, but I need to do one on each wrist and, and take it for some more adventures for sure.
For sure. So yeah, you know, let's move on to some other things that are also on the rugged sphere. You know, I saw you reviewed a rugged phone that has a bunch of, you know, night vision and thermal vision features. And, you know, rugged Android phones have been around for a while now. You know, I've reviewed a whole bunch of them. You reviewed this AGM Glory. That's what it's called. G1S. Such a name. You know, it's such a Chinese kind of name. There's tons of these kind of like unknown brands,
yeah,
to the West, unknown at least, that make these rugged phones. And I've reviewed a bunch of them, not actively like writing reviews, but I talked about them on the podcast. I took a bunch of them to Burning Man over the years to use as my main phone since I used to work there. So I used to actually have to like be connected and be on Google Docs and stuff. And we had Wi-Fi for staff there so I could connect. And rather than take a Pixel with me, which is my normal main phone, or like an iPhone or something in a case, I would just like beat the crap out of this thing, yeah, for the 3 weeks I was there, right? Kind of like what you did for your Watch Ultra review.
Right.
And they always held up. And yeah, while they weren't like flagship level phones in any way, they were mid-rangers, all of them, they never felt terrible. Like they always did the job. Like they, first of all, none of them broke. Secondly, I didn't have to worry about them breaking, which was great. And then third, because a lot of dust at Burning Man. And third, you know, the camera were average, but a bit of Google photo editing, and I could make some usable shots, especially if I just had to document something, like take a photo of something that needed fixing or whatever. And then, you know, the screens were generally okay, sometimes not bright enough, but usually all right. Big enough, there was always enough processing power to get the work done, and generally some cool features like, you know, laser pointers or laser rangefinders or thermal cameras or night vision cameras or something else. This seems to have all of that. But without getting specifically into the AGM Glory G1S, what do you think the place in the world of smartphones is for these devices? Do you think there is a market? Do you think people should pay attention? Or are you just better off putting a Galaxy S or A series in a big OtterBox bullet case or something and call it a day?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've seen over the years, these rugged phones have definitely gotten thinner and more compact on their rugged cases that they wrap around them. Which to me has been a good thing because it doesn't look as, oh, that's for sure a rugged phone because it's this awkward thing with tons of plastic around it and everything else.
Right.
And there is, you know, in my normal, well, not normal, my day job, I'm a ship designer and I do spend time in the shipyards and I kind of observe the shipyard workers that are out there and not a lot of them have their phones out in the yard. And there's a real, I think there's still a market now. Maybe it's a million or so sales or something like that, a million units or something like that for these people. But there is people that are out in the field that don't want to wrap their iPhone in a rugged case. That's not as reliable, even when you do have a rugged case, as something like this that's purposely built for that rugged environment or that field environment. And enough of these things have special features. You know, this one, you mentioned the thermal, which was great for seeing the hot spots on the generators, yeah, and the engines.
That's
the laser awesome. Pointer was pretty good. I would like to see a laser range finder so you can measure distances. You know, a lot of the things that people use the tools in their toolbox for, if the phone can do that too, I think that's, you know, a nice fit.
Yeah, I reviewed like this Unihertz, a mini rugged phone they had for a while that had a laser range finder.
Okay.
And had the ability with a sort of some of the depth sensing technology to measure things.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, like Google Tango did back in the day. And now you can use using I don't know, whatever the AR SDK is for Google. So that little phone app, you tapped on it and it let you like, it fired up the camera and you would just like click on a, like a little crosshair. So you click on the screen for the starting point of the measurement and you click in another ending point and it kind of that knew the parallax and would give you relatively accurate measurements. And then the rangefinder laser would actually give you, you know, pretty accurate depth if you wanted to point it at some deep hole and find out how deep that was or something.
And most of these phones, you know, they're running a mid-range processor. They they usually have 5,000 plus milliampere batteries. So the thing about them too is you start your day and you don't even have to think about battery life. It's going to go a full work day out there in the field. And a lot of these rugged phones like this have started and launched on Kickstarter. And every single time I go there to see these, they all far exceed their goals and usually bring in a million plus of dollars. So there's somebody that's a big
there's somebody, fan of these right. things. That's how I feel too. And you know, they also have like, you know, not the best screens, but they're decent enough, usually 1080p large screens. Easy to use. Brightness can be better. I don't know if this AGM had decent enough brightness for outdoors use, but the camera's also, you know, generally like 48 megapixel, you know, something mid-range, but generally, you know, nothing too crazy, but it gets the job done. But the thermal imaging one are cool. Like I reviewed the Cat one that had the thermal imaging back in the day. And that's a game changer, right? Like they were using a FLIR sensor, like the real thing too.
That's what I was using it for on the ship trials, right? Because when we're running trials, we're looking at the engine temperatures, we're looking at piping, and then we're also looking at electrical boxes to make sure all the connections are actually hot. And that's the one way to spot whether a connection is made and terminated and things like that. So there's real use for that stuff. And then you can use that for search and rescue purposes, right? You can use that to help find people and stuff too in conditions. So,
and then a lot of these phones have wireless charging too. Like it just seems to be a pretty standard features on these phones, which, you know, I love to have. It's not something I use all the time, but it's nice to have and I like to see it. For a long time, these phones didn't have fingerprint sensors, but now they're starting to. Usually they're in the back or on the side or the power lock key or something because, well, in display doesn't really work as in a rugged environment, I guess.
And if you're using gloves or something else, maybe that you can't use that as well, you know.
There's the gloves thing. Yeah. But overall, I've been pretty happy with the ones I've used, Cat and others. Some like Ulefone is one of the brands that I looked at. Gioni or something. I can't remember how you say that. There's a bunch I've played with over the years. And
Doogie, I think it is, right?
Doogie, that's right. Yeah. I've never walked away from those thinking, what a piece of trash.
Right, like, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's never been like, oh, I would make this my daily phone or my main phone. But I thought to myself, yeah, if I'm going to Burning Man or if I'm going on a weekend where I'm going to be in nature and I'm going to have to worry about like rocks and scratches and sand and dust and dirt, maybe I'll just carry this with me and then go back to my Pixel in the evening at the cabin kind of thing, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And most of them are affordable enough where you can do that, right? They're usually $500 or less kind of thing. So, you know.
So I would say, you know, don't dismiss those necessarily. I'm not sure they should be your main phone, but at the price point, you might want to get one just, you know, to have something, especially if you are, you know, have a job or a leisure time that involves danger for your smartphone. but more importantly, I feel like the one thing you have to be aware of these phones, the caveat, and I think you mentioned that in your review, is that, you know, software is generally pretty stock, but generally not going to get updated. So, you know, you get what you get from the moment you buy and stick with that, right?
Even Unihertz, who you mentioned, you know, they probably come out with a phone every year, but I've kind of looked into them. Whatever software it launches with, that's pretty much all you're getting. I haven't seen any of those companies commit to even the Android security updates. So be happy with what's in there. Then it'll be okay, but don't expect too much more from that, you know?
I mean, that being said, as much as I don't like it, it's pretty standard amongst kind of like, you know, third tier, if I want to call them that, Chinese Shenzhen-made brands, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to get that level of software update and follow through.
Yeah.
The second tiers being like Poco and Redmi and Realme and stuff, where you get some updates, but it's still not ideal. And the first tier being, you know, Samsung, Apple, Pixel, Moto, possibly even like the main brands of BBK Group, like Oppo and OnePlus and Xiaomi for the flagships and stuff. You're going to get updates on those for a while. But, you know, I think everybody's learning, right? Samsung has finally kind of gotten on board with software updates. I think OnePlus did it on and off, has done a good job, you know, sometimes off, sometimes on. But I think I'm seeing Oppo doing a better job now, and I'm seeing, you know, Xiaomi doing a better job.
Right.
So I think this is kind of far removed from that still. You know, we're like looking at basically they sell and forget.
Yeah.
And they're going to sell a slightly upgraded version next year if you look in their catalog, which will have, you know, the new 50 megapixel sensor instead of the 48 and the new MediaTek chip with 5G versus last year's. And the display is probably going to be the same. The industrial design, very similar. The spec sheet, very similar. And a lot of them have micro SD expansions. There's all kinds of nice little things about them. They have headphone jacks. Lot of really great functionality.
Infrared receivers or transmitters to be able to control things. Yeah,
they're kind of like a Swiss Army knife in a way.
Right.
If your expectations aren't too high and your budget is limited, I would even say you could use those as a main phone and be happy.
It's actually kind of a not a bad idea to have one of those in your like emergency kit in your car, because I find that the standby batteries, you know, to check the software updates, I've pulled some of those out 2 years later just to kind of see, is there a software update? And the battery will still come on and turn on without me charging it for a couple of years. So it's not a bad idea to have one of those in your emergency kit, you know, earthquakes or
I was going to say earthquake or your flood kit. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And they're all water resistant. That's the other thing, you know, some of them are not as rugged as they imply to be, but they generally meet the IP specs that they put on the box. In my experience, that's been the case. Like I wouldn't hit them with a baseball bat or a golf club, like Mr. Who's the Boss did famously on one of his videos, you know, but I would definitely dunk them in water. I would definitely put them in dust. I would definitely put them in the mud and not think twice, even bring them to the beach. I took the Kyocera Dura Force.
Oh yeah. Right.
Verizon did with, had a real Snapdragon 765G, that one.
Yeah.
A lot of these have MediaTek chips, but this one had a Qualcomm chip and this one is supported by Verizon. It's, you know, the whole shebang. I took that one to the beach along with a tough book from Panasonic.
Yeah.
And I had a day of let's work in the sand. It was awesome. You know, I literally I kind of planted the Duraforce phone right into the sand next to my beach towel. Yeah. I was like, use the sand as a stand and watch my notifications come in on the phone. It was great.
That's awesome.
Like being able to do that without giving a care in the world. Right. There's something special about it, folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, So maybe to wrap that up, specifically on this phone, what were the strengths and weaknesses and would you recommend it?
I would actually recommend it. I didn't expect much from it, but I really liked the thermographic and I really liked the laser pointer. That was actually pretty useful for me. And then the battery just, you know, I got a couple of days of use out of it. No problem. Didn't even think about it, you know, so not a bad phone.
Awesome. Well, folks, check out the link in the show notes. Moving on, we got a bunch of news and some of them are going to take a bit of time. So Amazon went nuts all of a sudden and kind of like vomited out a bunch of new products. I'm sorry, that's kind of a bad picture in your head, I know, but it felt like that to me. Like, I'm like, what the hell? What the hell kind of monster are you, Amazon, that you're coming out with so many products in one day? I couldn't even keep track. But I wanted to ask you, which product, if any, stood out for you?
So I didn't expect this. I know I'm not in, I guess I'm not in Amazon emails or anything. So I was caught off guard. I was caught off guard, but there's one product that I immediately actually went and pre-ordered. And that is the Kindle Scribe. So the reason that I immediately ordered it is I have a coworker who loves his Remarkable 2. And he's been showing me all the features of it and everything else. And he's like, well, it's pretty good, but there, you know, it creates PDFs. It doesn't sync to OneNote. It doesn't do all this other convenience things I've been looking for. So I'm like, oh, okay, I can't really go with it. But as soon as I saw the Scribe and I saw all the support for Word and Microsoft, plus I have a Kindle Oasis and I love that for non-distracted reading, I'm like, well, this is my advanced Kindle Oasis, and now I can take notes and sync it to Word and everything else. And there's more features coming with Microsoft integration in 2023. I placed my order, and I can't wait to try it out because I'm looking for
And the for price like is very reasonable, $339.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how much is a Remarkable? It's got to be more than that.
I think it's the base is $300, but then you got to buy a pen for like another $100 and something dollars or something. So it ends up being more than the Kindle.
And then, of course, you know, I feel bad for them because they probably got offered to be acquired by Amazon, but Amazon's like, screw that. We can do our own thing. I don't know. I'm just making things up here, guys, but I'm just kind of feeling that probably that could have happened because, you know, Amazon's done this before. They bought Ring, you know, they bought a bunch of other companies over the years. This product is very, you know, exciting to me too. Even though I'm not a pen user, I can kind of see the point of it.
Yeah.
The one that stands out to me a little more as well is the, where is it called? The cube thing. Yeah. The new Fire TV cube. You know, and also, is this their first TV? Have they made a TV before? Am I losing my mind that I don't know they've made a TV before? They're the Fire TV now.
Yeah, I don't think they've made one before. No, I think this is new.
So is this the first time they've made it? Kind of feel like it is the first time they made a TV. But anyway, if it is, if I'm completely clueless and they've made a TV before, folks, please don't be mad at me. If they haven't, this is a big deal. Like an Amazon branded TV with built-in Fire support, I think, with a QLED, you know, QLED display, I think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's not a super cheap, which tells me that it's not a junky product either. So that's interesting. But the cube, I don't know. I have a thing for the set-top box or the appliance computer in a way. You know, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, obviously, this is geared to entertainment and consumption, right?
Right.
But I kind of like some of the features on this. Look at it. It's got like upscaling of HD content to 4K, but in the box, not on your TV, which is really cool. And of course, it has Wi-Fi 6E. You don't see that every day. And if you're going to stream, you know, high quality video, you're going to need some serious Wi-Fi connectivity or wired connectivity. It has both, but a lot of us don't have the luxury of running Ethernet cables everywhere we want because we live in apartments. So I'm glad to see that. And $139 is pretty good.
Yeah,
I don't know. What else is there here?
The other thing,
a bunch of cameras.
I can't remember the name of it. What is it called? The one that listens to you, that does your... Oh, the Halo Rise, the smart alarm clock that, you know, tracks your sleep and everything like that. Because then I could
have sleep tracking without wearing anything.
Yeah.
Is that a new product for them? I don't know.
I don't know.
See, that's the thing. Like, Amazon just comes out... Every year they have this big event where they spew out a bunch of new products. And it's just hard to keep track. Like with Apple, you have time to assimilate the content. You're like, okay, new phone, new watch, new earbuds. Okay, let's sit on that for a while. Then 3 months later, new iPad, new laptop. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I feel like I can keep track. With this, I don't know. It's just like, oh,
plus they're not naming it. They're not naming it a 2 or you know, the successor. So you say. There's so many products. I mean, if you were to buy all these, that'd be interesting. If you were to buy one of every one of these new products, what's your total cost? $1,000 or something?
You know? Probably a little more, actually. Yeah. But you know what? I'm actually surprised that the Echo Dot is $49. I think that by now should be $19, I swear.
Yeah,
like, I feel like considering Amazon is highly subsidized by its services.
Yeah.
You know, I know they give them away for free a lot. You can buy multiple packs at a discount and stuff, but I still feel like that should not be more than $19 or $29.
Right.
$49 seems high for something that should almost essentially be given away for free at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. That's my take on that. But look, it's interesting to me because, you know, we never think of Amazon as a hardware company much in our day to day because we go use the app, use the website, order some stuff, get delivered. I'm a Prime customer. I go to Whole Foods. I get my discounts. I'm happy. You know, I don't just go to Whole Foods, but there happens to be one 3 blocks from my house. It's very damn convenient. I don't have to get in a car. Just walk there, just in time purchasing. Perfect, right? Get fresh stuff.
Yeah.
It's not as nice as my local co-op. No, it's not as nice as Trader Joe's, where I can get some, you know, nice snacks that I love. But it's so convenient that I end up going there. But very rarely do I end up thinking about the Echo that I have in my bedroom, yeah, or the, you know, the Kindle that my spouse uses, or... And we got to remember that they are a hardware company as well. And yeah, it's kind of cool to see what they do. I do have a Ring doorbell as well, which I guess is now part of Amazon. When I bought it, it was still Ring. But I've got one of the OG Rings, you know. It's held up like, I don't know how many years they are. Like, yeah. I feel like it's almost a decade.
I went the Nest route. So everything in my house is Nest, you know.
You know, I would have totally gone with Nest, but they offered to give me a Ring to review years ago, yeah, when they starting out. And I was like, okay, sure. Just, you know, that, and yeah, you know, I actually start up, I reviewed the Dropcam before Google acquired, yeah, it and turned into Nest Cam. I have an original Dropcam still. It still runs.
I still have one that I bought a outdoor enclosure for the Dropcam. But the problem now is that Dropcam uses a Nest app, but then all the new cameras I have use the Google Home app, and they haven't yet converged that. So I have to have two apps to see all my cameras, which is a real pain in the ass.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. While I can see my Ring and manage it from my Alexa app or whatever, or Amazon app or whatever, there's still a separate app, you,
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, Anyway.
Yeah.
I just... I know probably never going to happen, but I want to be able to see my Ring from and manage it properly from my Google Home stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Not going to happen. I know. But come on. I can dream. Okay. Let's see. Yeah. So to me, it's like Amazon, let's not forget they do hardware. Yeah. And I think it's kind of cool. I'll leave a link to a Tom's Guide story that basically walks you every product. So you, those of you who can keep track of this stuff and memorize it, Good for you, because I don't know how you do it. Now, bad news coming, speaking of Nest and Google ecosystem, Stadia is going to be shuttered,
yeah,
on January 18th, 2023. I want to say that I'm disappointed, and I am, but I'm not surprised at all. Like, how did we not see this coming?
Yeah.
I mean, if you didn't, how did you not see it? I did see it coming. I knew it was coming.
I never got on board Stadia, just because I don't know. There, I was already kind of using the Xbox stuff, and I didn't know how committed Google was to this long term. And now we see, I made the right choice, right? It's always the hard part with Google is are they in it for the long haul? Is this just an experiment to try out a few things, you know? But
and that's the problem, right? Yeah. Because you. Makes you think twice when you want to invest into it. Yeah. I mean, in here, they are, if you have games, and I think they're going to refund you some stuff. I don't know exactly.
I think everything, which is pretty amazing.
But if you have a subscription, they're not.
Like
if you created a collection through the subscription service. So the story that I'm going to link in the show notes gets into more detail about it. But seems like there's going to be a bunch of disappointed people.
Yeah.
But, you know, the writing's been on the wall. They canceled, they shuttered their studio a while back.
Yeah.
You know, the technology is great. It's solid. It works. But, you know, Google is going through some kind of restructuring right now. And that's how we lost the Pixel books. And, and we talked about that a couple of episodes ago. Those are gone, apparently. And then Stadia, you know, it makes sense. It's a low-hanging fruit. If you're consolidating your products, you got to get rid of the ones who are not performing. And, you know, even though the technology is sound and it was a good idea, you know, you're right. Like, why wouldn't you be using whatever Sony or Microsoft are doing in this realm, right? Or even Valve, right? It's a tough sell.
Yeah, I just feel bad for the developers that might have put a lot of eggs into this basket, you know?
Well, that's the challenge. I actually feel more bad for the consumers that are, those of that had a subscription, because they're not going to get their money back on that.
Right, right.
But hey, there it is. Stadia's going away, so prepare yourselves.
Yeah.
Vivo X Fold Plus announced. Now, Vivo is interesting because it's part of BBK Group, but it's kind of like the, how do I put this nicely? Because I do care about Vivo. I like them a lot, so I'm not trying to be mean. But I love their products, but they're kind of like the, not the problem child, but they're kind of the special child of the BBK group in the sense that they kind of do their own thing. Mm. Like, you know, you look at Realme and Oppo and OnePlus, and there's some clear structure.
Yeah.
There's some clear parts bin and suppliers that they work with, and certain devices use certain things. And, you know, there's a lot of cross-pollinating, kind of like Xiaomi with Poco and Redmi. But, and then you have Vivo. And half the time you're like, wow, like, is that really the same company? Because they're kind of doing their own thing. And I love it. That's why I'm not trying to be mean. Problem child is probably not the right word, but, you know, special child, maybe. I don't know. The point is that they make some really cool phones, especially at the high end. The X series of camera-centric smartphones are incredible. They're up there with the best of Huawei, the best of Google Pixel, the best of iPhone, the best of Samsung Galaxy Ultra type stuff. And the X80, particularly this current flagship, the X80 Pro, is one of my favorites, you know, imaging camera phones today. And there's an X80 Pro Plus coming with an upgraded Qualcomm Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1. That's rumored right now. Mm-hmm. But they also did launch a Vivo X Fold a while back, like I think earlier this year, which was, you know, their folding phone, their Galaxy Fold equivalent. But unlike the Galaxy Phone, this is still an imaging-centric device with the Zeiss lenses and the Sony branding, the T-Star coating, and some impressive camera specs. And the few people like Michael Fisher and Mr. Mobile who reviewed this phone said it was the closest thing to a Fold in terms of, you know, really being competitive, you know, other than the US 5G support and all that. Of course, it does have Google mobile services. It's a Chinese phone, but it still supports it. So, you know, now they've updated it. And the only big change here is really just the Fold Plus name instead of Fold. And of course, Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1. But I want to remind everyone that if you see a phone upgraded with an 8 Plus Gen 1, that's good news because battery life is going to improve, performance is going to improve, thermals are going to improve. So this is the kind of upgrade you want to see.
Right.
And of course, new colors. But there's not much else changed here. This thing is still a complete monster of a phone with incredible cameras and incredible performance. Just now you get the latest chip. So this is good news. What do you think of this phone?
Yeah, I've heard a lot about the Vivos. I know that talking to you in the past with their imaging and stuff like that, I've never tried any of the Vivos out before myself, so I can't speak directly to any hands-on. I love the new colors. I've got my Z Fold 4 in hand. I'm a huge foldable fan. Not as big as Michael Fisher, of course, but yes. I love them. And I, as a commuter on a train, it's a perfect device, you know, to sit there and slap it open and have that big huge display. So these look awesome, look lovely. The only thing is they're not easily available in the US, which is a shame. So
for sure, I mean, what I love is like you look at the specs and you're like, oh my god, okay, so 50 megapixel main module in the back, right? That's not too unusual, but this is like one of the big sensors, guys.
Yeah,
this is like a seriously large sensor. And then it has like, you know, it's a GN, so it's a GN5, which is a pretty great sensor. OIS, of course, f/1.75, which is pretty decent. 48 megapixel ultra wide, 12 megapixel for portraits, dedicated lens, which they've always done. So you get a really natural bokeh because the lens is optimized for taking portraits. It's still on autofocus, and some of their portrait lenses have OIS as well. I don't know of this one. And then, of course, if that wasn't all enough already, you have an 8 megapixel periscope with 5x. It's a folded lens with OIS, of course, because, you know, like, let's show Samsung how to make a real camera system on a folding phone, right? That's basically what this reads to me.
Right.
And don't get me wrong. I think the Samsung Galaxy Fold has a decent camera setup, especially this year, the improvements with 3 cameras. But this has 5 cameras on the back.
And
none of them are crap, which is quite the tall order. So.
And it's a pretty fair price, right? I mean, the equivalent price in US dollars looks to be, you know, a couple hundred less than even the Z Fold 4, which pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, right? They're very competitive. Also, they're very thin.
Yeah.
And they fold perfectly shut, which is nice. They're a little bigger, I think, in terms of form factor, but the pricing is good. The specs, you know, you get 50 watt wireless charging, you know, you get probably 50 watt wire charging as well, like stuff that you don't see on a Fold, right?
And so, that, so I mean, they have wireless charging. They have solved that. I have been looking at the images of it. They have solved being able to fold it pretty flat. There's not much of a gap there on the Fold.
Yeah, so a lot of the phones that are competing with the Fold coming out of China, whether it's Honor or Huawei or Vivo or who else has done Oppo with the Oppo Find N, they are doing the teardrop thing that the Moto Razr is doing, right? So they're able to shut perfectly because inside they're kind of reserving space for the thing to kind of fold at a less extreme angle, and so you also have less of a crease when you open it up, which is really nice. So this is some of the things that I feel like I want to see Samsung kind of get into, but unfortunately they don't really have any competition here in the West, so I'm not sure they're too inclined on trying to improve. I mean, don't get me wrong, I still think the Fold is a solid phone. There was great improvements this year, but you see this and you're like, also, let's see, 120 hertz LTPO panel on the main one, which is kind of amazing. Oh, and get this. Both that and the cover display have ultrasonic fingerprint readers, the really big ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like, wow.
The only thing no stylus support, right?
It's 80 watt wire charging. No, there's no stylus support, I don't think. That's the thing, though. Right. 80 watt wire charging, of course, because China. And the battery is 4,730 milliamp hours. How does that compare to the Fold?
I think it's 4,500 on the Fold.
So it's a little more, I think it's a slightly bigger phone. So anyway, look, it's cool. And that's why we just had to mention it.
Yeah.
Because those of you out there who can buy this in whatever market or buy it from China, bring it to Europe where it probably will work on 5G. Good stuff. Here's the thing, though. I just want to put this out there for my international audience and my, North American audience. I've been testing a lot of Chinese phones recently that seem to work well and be very happy with T-Mobile's 5G bands. So if, like me, you're a 5G customer on T-Mobile, and generally a customer on T-Mobile because they support 5G by default, you might want to consider that. Yeah. I would say trial it out first because you're... the region might not have the right flavor of 5G, but for me, who spends most of my time on the West Coast, whether it be in San Francisco or in the Northwest, I can tell you that I've had more luck in the most recent months with these Chinese phones. Mm-hmm. And I think this has all come with some of the new Qualcomm and MediaTek chips.
Right, right.
So perhaps you can make this your main phone.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Last item on the agenda is Samsung Galaxy S23 leaked renders. Now, usually I wouldn't cover this, but I'm looking at these, and usually at this time of year, they tend to be pretty accurate.
Yeah, right.
And I'm kind of excited in a way because I feel like I was getting a little tired with the design they had for 2-3 years now, repeating itself. And this looks like they've basically taken the kind of rounded edges from the previous design, which I really liked, and, very equal bezel, rounded edges, and then they've taken the back of the S22 Ultra, which we know is essentially the same as what's coming for the S23 Ultra, and done the camera things where they're like individual pods for each lens. I think that looks really good.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, it looks very clean. I've been a huge fan of the S22 Ultra and that whole design. At first, I kind of liked the little... built up area they had on the I don't know what it start with, the S20s or something like that, but I've definitely switched to being an S22 Ultra styling fan, and I like
the design of it too.
Yeah,
it's pretty nice, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, very clean.
I still think it's one of my favorite designs. Like, I like the squareness of it, and the camera pods, the way it's done. So this is kind of like a hybrid. It's got that roundness that we like, that I kind of like about the Galaxy, the non-Ultra, but the camera pod from the S, I think it's cool. Yeah. I'm looking forward to hopefully this being true, but I have a feeling it is. The leaker for this is pretty well known for having nailed this in the past. So
yeah. These are usually a February launch too. We're seeing these leaks like 6 months in advance or so, right?
I mean, this design leak is probably, the design's probably set.
It's just,
I'm not surprised they would have this nailed by now. Is there any other phones that you've seen leaks of recently that have titillated you at all? Because I think we saw OnePlus 11 Pro leaks the other day too. I don't know if you saw those.
Was it the 11 Pro? I saw something. Maybe that was the one that I saw. Yeah. Nothing else.
I mean, obviously we can expect, you know, the usual kind of bombardment of flagship phones right after Qualcomm announces its, what I expect to be the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2.
I've been wondering what their naming convention is going to be, you know, now that they...
I think that's what it is. It's going to be Gen 1, Gen 2, Gen 3.
Okay.
And then, of course, everybody's going to try to compete to be the first, right, with one of those phones, like last year with Moto trying to outdo Xiaomi. I mean, a few phones launched before the holidays even, or during the holidays last year in China. And then, because Chinese New Year's is coming up right after, you know, and so they want to have, like, these things out by then. And then that's how we got the OnePlus 10 Pro kind of announced without being announced. You know what I'm saying? Like, because we knew what it looked like. People even bought it to review it, bought it from China to review it because it's China only. Right. And I felt like it totally killed the suspense for us. It was kind of sad because usually when they've launched the OnePlus flagships, they've done so in North America first, right?
Right. Yeah.
So interesting. Well, listen, we should wrap up. Do you want to tell folks where they can find you on the internet, your various social media handles, and of course, where you write and all that?
Yeah, I write on ZDNet. Just go to our website, ZDNet.com, and you'll see we have a new design refresh over the last couple of years. Nice new colors and style and everything else. So check that out.
I saw that, and a lot of people don't like it, but I think it's pretty
fresh. I like it.
Yeah, I'm glad you do too. I mean, it's like, I seem to be one of the few people like, what's the big deal, guys? It's kind of colorful and fun. Like, hello.
Yeah. I'm mostly find me at Palm Solo on Twitter and other places. Twitter, Instagram, everything, you know. Palm Solo is the easiest way to find me.
So folks, check out Matt Miller's hard work on ZDNet and follow him on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to chat with us about this podcast, do it on Twitter because I'm Tankgirl on Twitter, as you know, TNKGRL, like the comic book character, but drop the vowels. Easy to remember, TNKGRL. That's both on Twitter and Instagram. You know, hit us up to chat about the podcast on Twitter. Check out my Instagram to see pretty pictures of phones, pretty pictures of cars, of food, of travel stuff, all taken with phones, mostly taken with phones. Also, the podcast lives at mobiletechpodcast.com or on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, everywhere good podcasts can be found. So please subscribe and tell your friends and check us out. And if your app lets you review or rate the podcast, please consider doing that. If you want to see some visuals for free that go alongside the podcast, check out the YouTube channels. There's a couple of them. YouTube.com/mobiletechpodcast and YouTube.com/mobiletechmore. You know how YouTube works. So like, subscribe, click the little notification bell, tell your friends, comment. You can comment about the podcast too. If you just basically want to see unboxings or have a look at some of the phones that I'm talking about on the show or some of the non, you know, phone stuff that ends up on the More channel that I talk about on the show, check out the YouTube channels. I'd appreciate that. There's also a Patreon. If you want to help me and support me financially, Patreon's the way to go. You can watch me and Matt speak on video to you instead of the audio version. You get it a little earlier than the audio version, generally a day or so in advance. And it's a little more raw, less edited, a little more off the cuff. So, you know, unless there's something majorly bad, I leave the bloopers in there for fun. So, you know, that's one thing you can get from Patreon. The other one you can get is access to the Discord, so you can chat with me. And there's a bunch of other perks in there you can check out. One of them is to talk with me on a monthly basis, kind of like in a chat. So that's something to think about. If you want to help, that would be great. Patreon.com/TankGirl. That's Patreon.com/TNKGRL. And if you want to help in another way that doesn't involve Patreon, maybe you don't like Patreon, there's a PayPal link in the show notes. You can click through, you know, donate $5. I can buy a coffee. I'll be happy. I like a good coffee, as you know. So help if you can. Help any way you can. I'd appreciate it. It helps me make this podcast possible. And speaking of making the podcast possible, Audible is our longtime sponsor. There's another thing you can do to support the podcast, and that's support Audible. We have a special deal for you. If you're not already a member of Audible, it's audibletrial.com/mobiletech. That's audibletrial.com/mobiletech. If you want to get a 30-day free trial and maybe keep a book at the end, and hopefully you'll stay on, you'll get a great collection of books to read. And, you know, audiobooks are a big deal. If you're like me and you love books, but maybe you don't have time to read or your eyes are tired at the end of the day, you know, just put on headphones, earbuds, listen to a book being read to you. Take your time with it. There's some also shorter content there you can kind of sink your teeth into. There's some exclusive podcasts. They have some books read by the authors. So for all this stuff, I think you'll stay when you join audibletrial.com/mobiletech and try out your 30-day free trial. Consider it. It'll help me. It'll help Audible. And I think you'll love it because, like me, if you like books, Audible is something you really should have. So thanks to Audible once again for being our longtime sponsor. And thank you, Matt, for being my guest on the show yet again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Anytime.
Absolutely. We'll have you on at some point again in the future for sure. And folks, we'll have another show next week. So stay tuned for that. Until then, cheers, everybody.
This has been the Mobile Tech Podcast with Tank Girl, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com. You can visit us online at mobiletechpodcast.com.